gonna grab a drink. Jolene?
General support of this evening's broadcast is provided by the employees of Libby Owens Ford Company. LOF manufactures architectural and automotive glass products for both domestic and world markets. Libby Owens Ford is proud to join with the members of TV 30 in support of fine programming.
From the nation's capital, the McLaughlin Group, an unrehearsed program presenting inside opinions and forecasts on major issues of the day.
GE is proud to support the McLaughlin Group. GE. From residential to commercial lighting, we bring good things to life.
Here's the moderator, John McLaughlin.
Issue one.
Go win the Blues!
Go win the Blues!
Go marching in!
Go marching in!
Go win the Blues! Go marching in! Oh, how I want to be in the number! Go win the Blues! Go marching in!
Welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. So everyone, this past fall, I think we have all experienced an extended period of soul-searching and political unrest, per se, between the federal and national elections, the pandemic-related social justice movements, and specifically here in Asheville, the turmoil based around Black Lives Matters and the Vance Monument. I would think that it's not too much of a stretch that we've all needed somebody to lean on during the course of the events of the past 6-7 months, for some of us even longer. And I'm very happy and excited to welcome to the podcast today Nathan Phillips, who was definitely one of those shoulders that I leaned on during the past 7 months. Nathan, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. Thank you.
Fantastic. So, guys, I knew Nathan by the Asheville Armory Arsenal fan group here in town. And he was definitely a friendly ear to pull during the course of the election and banter things about. And after the election and the ensuing Saturday that it eventually took after the Tuesday of the election, a couple weeks later, we were bantering back and forth on DM chain with another one of our Armory members. And, around about the time that we made the metaphor of Beto O'Rourke being the Francis Coughlin of the Democratic Party, we realized we had fallen too far down the rabbit hole and maybe we needed to take a deep breath and, go back and explore the intersection of politics and sports, specifically in Asheville. And Nathan, in examining that, I think we took a step back and looked at the state of Asheville, specifically with Asheville City. I think one of the unresolved issues that has gone by the wayside during the pandemic and during the cancellation of the Asheville City Soccer Club season is that Memorial Stadium is still sitting up on the hill, unrenovated. And at the current moment, there, if you look on the bond webpage, there is a very confusing calendar of projected dates where they actually say this fall that the project should be completed. And yet it says something along the lines of in the spring of 2021, it's going to get started. What do you think about that? What the bond project and what's going on with Memorial?
Well, the confusing timeline is not surprising at all. I've been in Asheville for 5 years and have quickly learned not to have great expectations when it comes to our local government. So, it's not surprising. It is a bit concerning because there is a ticking clock for the bond as to when the money can be used. And this pandemic is definitely pushing us, I think it's pushing pretty close to the deadline.
Yeah, so just to recap, what that bond was in 2016. The voters of Asheville voted overwhelmingly, 77% to 23%, for a $4.1 million bond specifically to go to Memorial. This was part of an overall bond that was going to go to parks and recs within the city. The emphasis was going to be on community involvement, more park space, stadium improvements. And they needed to look at Memorial. In 2016, this was before Asheville City came in, but Asheville City, obviously, I think we could all admit that Asheville City could not exist without Memorial. Do you think there's another space where an amateur men's and women's team could succeed in the city outside of Memorial?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, other soccer fields are out of town, you know, both east and west, and they don't have the setup for a crowd and for the food trucks for the drinks. Yeah, I know that it's got to be Memorial Stadium. It's a perfect location for it.
And I think there's a natural tie-in. Obviously, we're going to get pretty deep into the weeds with the city's agreement with the Asheville Tourists, but even City Councilwoman Julie Mayfield said a couple years ago, you know, there's an overwhelming sense that downtown is no longer for the citizens of Asheville, that it has become a commodity to be leveraged by hotels and the tourism industry. And yet it amazes me that, the Orange Peel, Civic Center, items like that continue to be have a light shine down upon them as venues that offer locals the opportunity to enjoy the best of Asheville, but even McCormick to a degree, and yet Memorial continues to sit on the hill, unused, under-leveraged, and just no one seems to quite appreciate for what it is. So the current, the last thing we heard from the city, from Parks and Recs, about Memorial was going into this year, pre-pandemic. In October of last year, there was the community input session. Asheville City fans and soccer fans just in general, overwhelmingly, again, the word overwhelmingly is going to do a lot of work during the course of this podcast, because I think public sentiment skews in one direction far more than the other, and yet there's not a recognition of that skewing. But at that public input session, again, that was initially, there was some debate whether there was going to be a track around the field, what was the formula that they were going to use to tie seats, actual butts and seats available. Were they going to tie it to parking spots? There was a lot of debate up. Asheville City, soccer fans in general won out. The community won out. There was going to be a FIFA regulated sized pitch up there that was going to allow, again, Asheville City to take advantage of that. Events such as Beer City Cup, where they turn the pitches sideways, would not have been allowed up there, or would not have worked up there if they had not also had the similar sized pitch. The city ended that session basically on, we need one more year to do a usage survey, basically. And that's what 2020 was supposed to be. What was Memorial going to be used for, basically, throughout the course of the year? The pandemic has definitely put that on pause. There's no way to get a true result out of that. So I think there's continuing to kick the can down the road. Nathan, what do you think are options, though, in the future on, it's just a $4.1 million bond. That's not going to get Memorial very far. What other options could they potentially look at? What other options for funding? What other options exist within the city mechanisms that could help build out Memorial?
Yeah, that's a curious question. Asheville seems to have an uncomfortable relationship with sports. Even the teams are here. The Tourists is, they're pretty well known for a minor league team. They are, I think it's the fourth or the fifth oldest standing baseball stadium in America. Babe Ruth, visited. He got sick on his way, so didn't technically play, but he visited. There's been a lot of Hall of Famers that have come through. Sparky Anderson comes to mind, being an old Tigers fan. And even Russell Wilson played there. You know, who's now obviously not in baseball anymore, but it's got a lot of history. It's an incredible stadium to go watch a game. It's absolutely gorgeous. When you sit in the stands, you just look out on a mountain, and the sunset is streaking across the sky. It's a wonderful place to watch a baseball game. They do quite well. They fill it out. I think it's 4,000 capacity, and they run, I think, about 75% most games, and it's full when you go to games there. You know, it feels full. It's lively. It's fun. It's a part of Asheville. You know, it's part of local Asheville. But it's really strange the way the city handles it. You know, they lease this stadium to the tourists for $1 a year, but then the city also picks up the tab on all the long-term maintenance. Even like they installed new lighting systems a number of years ago, $650,000, $700,000. Massive improvements. They take care of most everything except for the day-to-day cleanup after baseball games and turf management. So the city's paying a lot of money you know, to have the tourists here, and they're not really, I guess, leveraging the situation intelligently, in my opinion. So that right there, and you know, that's right next door to Memorial Stadium. Like, there's a great opportunity to have kind of a sports hub, a sports complex. I mean, it technically is. It's just never been identified as such. There's never been any help or action, or that I know of, support from the city to kind of build the sports culture. And it's already there, you know, to anchor it around. You know, funding coming in. You know, Asheville City Soccer Club has done well. I don't know how many home games they have in a year.
So between the men and the women's, you would be looking at, with friendlies, somewhere between 14 and 16?
Maybe like 2,500 people per game?
I think the last attendance was somewhere around 1,700 for the men and about 1,300 for the women.
Okay. Yeah, no, they bring in good money, and they're having to pay to rent the space, mm-hmm. and that would obviously be one way the city could help is to support them at the very least, stop charging them. They're, you know, they're renting out this huge baseball stadium for $1 a year, but Asheville City Soccer Club is having to pay exponentially more to be able for the privilege of playing soccer on what is right now a pretty bad field. you know, we talked a little bit beforehand about ideas like using the tourism tax, I forget the actual term for it, but you know, there's a couple mechanisms in the city budget that could easily be used to help fund the development of the stadium and the field for, you know, more than just the soccer team, but I think it'd be a really healthy move for the city overall.
So you landed on something a minute ago about the uneasy relationship Asheville has with sports. And you just mentioned also that you've lived here for 5 years. I've lived in Asheville for about the same, but have been a resident of Western North Carolina dating back to 1993. And going all the way back to 1993, there continued to be this kind of an uneasy relationship with sports. You know, obviously your outdoor sports such as kayaking, mountain biking, et cetera, have always thrived in the area and will continue to do so. So they're kind of unorganized and, you know, short of the 96 Olympics, when a little bit further west from here, they did the kayaking, you know, competitions and stuff in the mountains. That's neither here nor there. But in the early aughts, there actually was a pair of minor league sports that came through the city. The Asheville Smoke was a minor league hockey team that played at the Civic Center. And then the Asheville Altitude also played, which was the NBA's original attempt at kind of a developmental league. And the Asheville Altitude actually won the developmental league back-to-back years. North Carolina likes to fancy themselves as a basketball state, you know, maybe not quite to Indiana's level, but, you know, with our university system and the success that they tend to have between, you know, public and private, Carolina, Duke, State, Wake Forest, et cetera. But neither one, both were done at the city-owned Civic Center decent success at first, but with deteriorating return on investment. And they couldn't quite figure it out. I think when the tourists have also, despite what I think the myth has become, the tourists have not always been super successful filling that stadium either. You did mention it is currently, besides, I believe, Wrigley and Fenway at this point, it's now the third oldest constantly used stadium in the country, which is, I mean, just absolutely fascinating. But they've had some lean years, too. Now, the city's relationship with Memorial unto itself is also a little labored. You know, Memorial was built basically at the same time as McCormick. It was dedicated in 1927. It actually was the hub of sports for a while. You know, everything short of, or everything including rec softball leagues and, you know, the first game that took place on it was a college football game. So it was actually a destination place for other colleges to come and kind of meet in the middle and compete at. If you really want to go down that rabbit hole of Memorial Stadium history, go to search the hashtag Memorial Stadium History on Twitter. The Celso Blues did a fantastic, I think, 30-day long highlight of the different things that Memorial has done since 1927 up to the present. You know, the city has even tried to sell the stadium several times. They've tried to sell it to different developers. At one point in time, when baseball was actually very hot, they thought about demolishing Memorial and creating a parking deck, specifically to build out McCormick and make McCormick bigger in an attempt to, I guess, just leverage baseball in general, apple pie, you know, America's pastime. Thank God they did not do that, considering what baseball has turned into 30, 40 years later. But again, just like you were saying, it is an under-leveraged property within the city, in a city where it seems like every square foot of property is either for sale, being renovated, being reimagined, and here sits just a gem of a stadium, deteriorating and in desperate need of attention. And just like you mentioned, one of the opportunities that we do have in town is the Tourism Council. They have to them available a 6%, actually I think it's up to 7% now, occupancy tax, that basically every time somebody stays the night in a hotel room, 7% gets taxed onto their bill and eventually is available to the Tourism Council to distribute back out in some very, very subjective formula of, if I'm not mistaken, 66% needs to go back into the campaigning and marketing of tourism in Asheville, and 33% is available for basically local projects. This is going back to, I believe, the early aughts of 2000.
Yeah, about 20 years. There's been some pretty curious spends over time. They spent about $1 million for a parking lot at the Arboretum, which is a great draw, tourist draw, no doubt. But the Arboretum is owned by the University of North Carolina system. It sits on federal land, so they have access to money from a good number of sources. The city of Asheville gave them $1 million to repave their parking lot 1 year. They've given money to for-profit companies here in town. Highland Brewing to build their rooftop bar. Got a pretty good chunk of change from the city, hundreds of thousands. Navitat Zip Lines, which again, you know, they do bring people in from outside of Asheville. But they got, I think it's around $500,000 or so of basically just free money from the city. And it's gone to a number of different places over the years. It does feel very subjective. That's actually something I wanted to get more into. A lot of the sources, or like how that process works, why they pick what they do pick for the money. There seems to be plenty of it going about. They have put in a good bit for soccer over the years, renovating JBL, and which is the community soccer complex, a couple times, and then having to fix it because it's built on a floodplain, and first time they put things a few million dollars into it, they just assumed it was never going to flood, and then a big flood took it out, so they got to redo it all. So they put money into a number of different projects over the years, and you know, it feels, again, like it's very subjective. At the end of the day, though, most of what it boils down to, from what I saw and have seen, is their biggest metric is hotel rooms. You know, how many hotel rooms a business or an organization is going to fill over the course of the year. Even when they redid the JBL soccer complex a number of years ago, you know, they had to basically prove how many hotel rooms that was going to fill for Asheville. That is what their primary concern is, I guess, when it comes to doling out this money. So the way that they're developing, or the plan that they have for developing Memorial Stadium, does kind of confuse me, because I don't see... It seems very unclear as to what they're actually trying to do, other than just make the space look nice. Which I understand that, but there's so much more they could do. It feels like they're doing kind of a bare minimum to it. The stadium itself, the property around it, you know, all property in Asheville is through the roof as far as pricing, sales, development. There are hundreds of units have gone up basically within a stone's throw of this property over the last few years. And all the housing is going up in the area. And so it seems to be really good for the neighborhood. And that's traditionally what happens with sports stadiums. They tend to drive up the value around them when they're done well. People want to live there, especially when it's as historic as McCormick Field. Memorial Stadium, again, it's prime real estate sitting around the edge of a mountain. It is a gorgeous place. So the development plan just created a lot of green space, took away a lot of parking, and they seem caught between, I don't know if it's two minds or three minds, or maybe they're trying to make too many people happy. But it seems kind of like it's a wishy-washy sort of plan. You know, they need to really emphasize the things that are of value of the stadium. And it just feels like it's going to be a more dressed up version of what it is right now.
And to go back to what the current proposed plan is that they are trying to, again, do the survey study over, is the current plan only has, I believe, 500 seats tied to it within Memorial. Current capacity is 2,500. So that's a, you know, 80% reduction. And the way that they're trying to, the formula they're using to get there is, I don't know what the number is, but it's parking spaces to seats. And it's, I think, 2.7 parking spots per seat or something 2.7 seats per parking space. And I feel like this is such a labored formula because you, again, have a 4,000 seat baseball stadium a baseball's throw distance away from Memorial that is not being tied into the same space. And no matter how many times you reconfigure the spaces around Memorial, you're never going to have enough parking spots per 2,500 people, 3,000 seats, whatever you decide to put within Memorial. But Asheville's also a predominantly walkable town. I don't understand the need to say you have to have enough parking spots outside Memorial for people to get there. I would imagine the vast, vast, vast majority of people now aren't parking at Memorial for these soccer games, aren't parking at McCormick for the baseball games. They're parking somewhere downtown. And in doing so, you would think it would encourage them to grab dinner before a game, you know, grab a beer before the game, patron the small businesses of downtown. So to cut your nose off to spite your face just continues to amaze me. Not to mention, I believe it was last year, 2019. I mean, God only knows. It could have been 2015 at this point, for all I remember. But Jason Isbell came to town, and in a concert that was co-sponsored by the Orange Peel, you know, who I'm assuming rented Memorial from the city, went through all the rigmarole of all the different things to sell alcohol and security and lights and all the exact same thing that Asheville City has to do. And they sold Memorial out for a concert for the first time in 20, 30 years, apparently. It continues to be a space that the city could use to hold very, very unique events within the cityscape. It is not the convention center. It is not the civic center. It is not the Orange Peel. It is a one-of-a-kind public park, which I think is part of what's lost in this whole process. This is not a situation where Asheville City is trying to... Yes, they are probably asking for a lease on the stadium for X amount of dates throughout the course of the year. There is already kind of a glad-handed agreement with the city and with the tourists that if the tourists have a game that night, Asheville City can't. You know, whether it be out of respect for the neighborhoods or the infrastructure of police and security and EMS and all of those things. But from what I understand, part of what's holding the city back from just going full bore into this is the neighborhood's response to it. You know, the tourists are already playing 50 or 60 home games this season.
A little over 60,
if not, you know, close to 70. You know, those are spread out from March to September, I believe, April to September. And they're just concerned about an extra, you know, already 14 home dates. There are some doubleheaders now. So, but that's even kind of in a truncated 2-month schedule. And if Asheville City, who does have pro ambitions, currently those pro seasons might kind of be in a similar March to October sort of window, but you're only looking at 16 home dates at that point for a pro side, 7 more maybe for the women, who would probably still be amateur for a little bit until they could figure out the lower leagues of the women's game to create a pro opportunity there. Let's say they were to go pro, and you would have, you know, double up. You're looking at maybe 32 home games over the course of 6 months. The tourists get, maybe they aren't prime dates per se, but they do obviously get a lot of weekend games, a lot of Fridays and Saturdays. Anytime the tourists put out a schedule, you can reverse engineer, specifically in the months of May and June at the current moment, and basically figure out when Asheville City is playing, because it's when the tourists aren't. And then you can identify, okay, there's a weekend here, there's a weekend here. Asheville City collaborates with a lot of other users of the stadium, whether it be Ultimate Frisbee or the pickup leagues. You know, there's even a semi-pro football team that I think used to use the space. I don't know if they still do. But they collaborate with them to try to move dates around. Sometimes the city works with them, sometimes they don't. But it continues to be an interesting intersection of a municipality-owned property and a community-driven organization that I continue to believe is adding unbelievable value.
Yeah, it is definitely being driven. A lot of this is being driven by the communities that are around the stadium, which is a little frustrating. So it's not like this is a rowdy bar that happened to open up in a neighborhood and now all the people who own homes there are upset. This has been there since the 20s. You know, so it's coming up on 100 years. Like, this is not a surprise for anybody. Sure, the soccer team is new, but roughly 1,500 people per game versus 3,000 to 4,000 for the tourists. It's not... That's not bigger or worse, I guess, in the eyes of the community.
And does it... Would a community... You actually used to live in the apartments.
I was about to say, like, I lived in those new apartments that have been put up, and my back porch overlooked that field. So I see a lot of language in here from the city in the document that's just simply not true. They talk about how, like, people parking in this just huge empty space is infringing on the people's rights to use it. Mm-hmm. People did not use that space. The city mowed it, like, maybe twice a year. Mm-hmm. People would take their dogs down there, because that's where you could let them go off leash and play fetch or whatever. The space was not used. It was never used. It's just been this weird sort of just void of property.
And during tourist games, it's where the employees would park. Mm-hmm. Now, I think on the east end, part of the complaint from that neighborhood was the increased traffic through those very thin streets, not necessarily on Martin Luther, but specifically off of Martin Luther coming up into that parking lot.
Well, they live in a city.
That's...
and they're building, like, Lee Walker Heights. I don't know how many hundreds of units are going in there. There's that new project, the... I forget what it's called, the new South Slope apartment units, mm-hmm. 500 units going in there. That's not, like, going to increase direct traffic, perhaps, on some of the side streets. But they live in a city that's aggressively moving that direction. Like, the city pandering to the neighborhood because of 1,500 soccer fans 20 times a year is... it just feels ridiculous.
So, on the Oakhurst side of things, which is the side of Memorial, which is closer to the hospital, that is a little bit more of a, I don't want to say well-to-do neighborhood, but it definitely has a different flavor to it than the East End. Now, the East End, I think something that has cropped up this year has definitely been a brighter light being shined on the city of Asheville's past history of gentrification, of marginalizing our Black neighbors into that specific. Do you believe that the city is doing this out of the goodness of their own heart? or do you think we owe it to that neighborhood to at least hear them out and try to compromise, on their concerns, especially when it comes to soccer, which I think you and I, as fans of the sports and believers in the sport, understand that on a world stage, soccer certainly is not a white sport. I definitely don't believe it is. But in this country, I think it is. I think it's viewed as white. I think baseball is viewed as white. And that's a pair of heavy-hitting sports that theoretically continue to encroach upon a small segment of the city that this population was already kind of marginalized into. Is that a concern that needs to be taken into consideration in this formula?
I'm curious about when the stadiums were built, where that land came from. Because on the north side of them, obviously, and then even the south slope was the traditional African-American communities. And I think it was in the 60s or 70s when the city just basically put a big five-lane road right through it and seized all the property. Now it's where they house their tractors and shovels and some offices. Definitely needs to be, listened to and respected, obviously. I guess I'm not sure, what the soccer... Asheville City Soccer Club itself could do directly. We go around, we clean up the neighborhoods like we did yesterday morning. I'm sure there's a lot of little efforts like that. But I guess for me, the onus of the situation falls on the city itself, which I have zero expectation that they would do anything. I don't know if I can recall an instance where they have done something out of the goodness of their heart. Even the current reparations, if it's a bill or an agreement, that they announced a number of months ago, that's getting kicked down the road time and again, as long as other measures along those lines. I don't have any expectations whatsoever on the city to do anything. I think there's probably a number of ways that the sports teams in the area could be more inclusive or, should work towards that end. I'm just not sure how much, an end result it could have as far as the overall gentrification and just the fact that heritage of that land, that history is being, in the process of being erased for 40, 50 years now.
Can sports be an agent of healing within a city, within the way that a city reinvents itself, as Asheville grapples with what to do with the Vance Monument and moves forward with an all-woman city council for the first time in its history? What role could sports have?
I think it typically does. It does create divisions between fans of different teams and groups. But as far as within a local community, the level of sports that we have here, certainly. I was looking up into some of the sports sociology is preparing for this. Some of the key things to that was that it helps reduce antisocial behavior and promotes pro-social behavior. There's even some statistics that say it helps reduce crime in areas where there is an active, healthy sports community. I think it is just the message itself, I think, where we are now, with sports on approach in America, if it can be grassroots and it is naturally inclusive, it's based upon skill and ability as far as playing on a team, and then just enjoyment of a good time as far as watching it. So I think generally, yeah, it can be. I think it's naturally an inclusive thing.
And again, I think that's something that needs to be emphasized in this situation. There are other examples. You know, Greenville, for example, has a soccer team, a professional soccer team, that has collaborated with and cooperated with a charter school down there to build out a like a half modular, half permanent stadium, turf field that's been improved upon at Legacy Field, while they continue to look for property for their soccer specific stadium opportunity. And that's not what, and that's neither here nor there. I'm not saying that's a good model or a bad model. I'm just getting it as something to juxtapose what Asheville has. What is being proposed in terms of improvements at Memorial is that Memorial would remain a public park. Memorial would remain like kind of like what Key Worth Stadium in Detroit is, which is at dusk or at dawn when it opens, anybody who wants to use it can use it. Whether it be grandpa walking around the pitch, whether it be a pickup game at lunch, whether it be, you know, on a non-game night at dusk, you know, father and son go out there and kick the ball around, throw the baseball around, anything. It is a public park that has a lease with a small business. I think that's another thing that is getting lost in the examination of how to improve this. You as a public park, you would be creating an opportunity, whether it come from the Tourism Council and their fund, whether it come from you know, Park and Rec's budget, and we could definitely get into the Asheville City budget, which you know, definitely skews you know, towards police and fire and debt services and public works, and I don't think that's anything unique just to Asheville. But, you know, you start looking at, you know, $10.7 million for Parks and Recs for an entire year. And you got to start to question, what opportunities are you giving small businesses such as Asheville City? Asheville City Soccer Club is a small business. No matter how you dice it, it is a small business in this city. It is no different than the Orange Peel, which was looking to hold events at Memorial Stadium. It's no different than Beer City Cup, which is an annual event that takes place all over the county. You know, there was games last year or 2 years ago, the last time I volunteered with them at Montree, because JBL was underwater and they couldn't, you know, that's one of the pitches that they use for these games, which pulls hundreds of 7-on-7 amateur sides from, you know, international teams come from England and France to compete in this competition. And I mean, good God, what sort of hotel rooms or Airbnbs are being sold for that sort of thing? And the finals are held at Memorial. Memorial, it's an under-leveraged gem just sitting on that hill. And I don't understand why there's such a stark reticence to, whereas everywhere else around town, it seems like they understand the potential that these properties have. And yet they're just continuing to let, you know, that bond in 2016, $4.1 million, $4.1 million in 2020 is not getting you the same thing as it was 4 years ago. And at this rate, they only have 3 more years to issue these bonds. It's obviously going to take another year if they're going to do this survey study. We're looking at 2023 at this point. What is $4.1 million going to get you then?
Yeah,
you know, it's going to get
a watered down version of a watered down idea. It's
a half baked idea. I mean, at that point, it's literally just going to get you landscaping and maybe a fresh coat of paint over some dilapidated cinder block structures, basically.
The city obviously looks at everything as an investment. And unfortunately, they weigh everything in terms of hotel rooms. Again, that just kept coming up with all these bonds and the grants. It's just hotel rooms, hotel rooms, hotel rooms. I mean, it's ironic that Julie Mayfield herself moaned about the loss of culture downtown, because she was the swing vote that turned our Flatiron building, where I had an office and a store, into a hotel. So I've never spoken to her, but we're not on speaking terms. that's for everyone's betterment.
And historically, there is no proof that investment in private businesses in non-city-owned, municipality-owned properties actually ends up giving you a return on investment, correct? So as for example, in Charlotte, with the new owner of the Charlotte Panthers and Charlotte FC and all that, the city's going to end up giving that man, a multi-billionaire, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of tax incentives and, grace when it comes to different things when he's looking. And there is no actual proof that that sort of investment benefits the community, correct?
There's actually a lot of evidence that massive stadium projects like that for pro sports teams are just losers, financial losers. It doesn't necessarily increase employment. The people have been studying this for decades. I came across some doing the research here. But basically the general consensus is that they are just bad investments. And essentially politicians get bullied into it because of the pressure from the sports fans, from the owners, from the just glamour of having a professional sports team in your city. The prestige that comes with that, especially if they win a championship and, then all the eyes are on that city and, you hope your city aren't like burning couches and flipping cars, but
nothing a politician loves more than putting on a hard hat and being there for a ribbon cutting or a first shovel in the ground for a groundbreaking of some sort of perceived civic wellness project that inevitably is only actually going to benefit a private company.
Right, and it tends to be, poor for the cities. I'm sure they're imagining sitting in the box seats when they're putting that golden shovel in the ground and, all the fun that they're going to have. So it is a hard sell as that idea. I think the Memorial Stadium idea is a difficult sell to the city because, there's ways that you could build up hotel rooms, build that number up from traveling teams, potentially some traveling fans. If it could get married with the Beer City Cup and, with ABYSA and ABASA, then it could get a lot more clout. So it's a difficult sell because I don't think there's the number that would make the city sit up and say, oh, you're actually going to have enough, we're going to sell enough hotel rooms because if we improve Memorial Stadium. But there is a cultural impact, which I think is a little... It is a difficult sell here in Nashville. They do not seem to be, the city government does not seem to necessarily be focused on cultural impact of their developments and the things that they put their money into. I think potentially with a couple of the people coming onto city council, a couple of the new members, I know one, specifically Roni would imagine is very much more inclined to hear these arguments and probably to relate to them. I think Turner would also be inclined to that. It's just a very difficult sell to get them to think through in terms of cultural impact through sport.
That's what I was about to ask. There are some very, very clear projects of the last few years. The art museum, some of the Pit of Despair, which they're starting to finally figure out. These are spaces that they have identified as worthy of investment, primarily for local enjoyment. Why is it that there's still a cognitive dissonance of not understanding that sports can act this way too? Is it just a byproduct of the culture of Asheville, of Western North Carolina, of the times?
I don't know. I mean, sports are not like a popular thing here with within pop culture, with the Nashville top level culture. It's all supposed to be about arts and music and astrology and hippies and, that's Asheville culture. So there is usually kind of... a disconnect. People in artists and musicians aren't always sports fans. It just goes back to the high school. You're either a jock or you're an artist. I don't know, but there is even like UNCA that has sports. It's not a big deal there.
Basketball tends to do well, but I mean that's it.
Yeah, yeah. There's not a strong community connection though. Like I don't see advertising or hear. Like for the UNCA basketball team, or like that sports is not really just a thing. The tourists are kind of a thing, but they're almost kind of treated like a bad joke in a way. Like the scoreboard where it says visitors and tourists on it. People just think it's almost kind of like a cute little, the tourists are just kind of a cute little thing that happened and it's still here and look at the scoreboard, haha. And like You know, it's not a serious, it's not integrated with Asheville. It's kind of just sort of there all on its own. I think Memorial Stadium suffers because it's behind it. No one goes up there unless you are going there specifically to do something. So I think people just kind of forget about it. Yeah, and sports itself, I don't know. I mean, there's strong, like, community soccer, you know, the amateur leagues here and the youth leagues. It is very strong. But I'm not sure why it hasn't quite made its way into the, you know, the air quotes city itself.
I do think there's still work to be done, and I think the owners of Asheville City would be the first to admit that there is still work to be done in tying the grassroots, I guess literally the roots of the grassroots, the youth game up to the adult amateur game into Asheville City. I think there was some confusion initially what Asheville City was going to be amongst that population, the Shield, HFC. I mean, everybody seems to want this to succeed, but we're still only getting 1,700 people per game. You know, when there are probably twice, if not three times that, I think you play soccer, you know, whether it be a child and parents or something like that. I think there's also another emphasis, and I'm surprised nobody has made this argument yet, is that, you know, Asheville continues to become more diverse. It's not becoming diverse in any one ethnicity. It's not becoming diverse in any one race, which I think makes it harder to keep track of. But when I first moved to Asheville, I lived in West Asheville, kind of behind Kmart in the Emma community. And my daughter went to school at Emma Elementary. And Emma Elementary, when I saw the demographics, I was just absolutely stunned. It is 17% white. And there's not another school in Buncombe County that hits those demographics. There are pockets within Asheville where there are ethnic minority and racial minorities that I don't necessarily know if they've been historically marginalized as much as this is just affordable rent, affordable housing, communities that have done a great job, you know, supporting one another and creating infrastructure for themselves because, you know, the city and county weren't providing it for them. But these are also, not to stereotype, but they're cultures that tend to love soccer. And I don't necessarily know that we've tapped into that and welcomed them into downtown Asheville. They play on fields at the elementary school. They play on fields up in Weaverville, you know, towards North Buncombe. And I see no reason if the city is putting a mission upon itself to become and embrace its own diversity, that an opportunity like improving Memorial, again, a public park for all to enjoy, and inviting our neighbors downtown to enjoy. You know, I know people who have lived here for a very, very long time who just refuse to go downtown anymore. They don't see, just like, you know, Julie Mayfield said, like, they don't see downtown for themselves anymore. I think, you know, whether it be Pete's Pies or Claddaugh's or the old location of Old London Road, you know, a lot of us soccer fans aren't necessarily going to the downtown breweries. I know Green Man was kind of the soccer pub for a while, the soccer brewery. Highwire obviously has been a great collaborator. But I admit too, you know, short of maybe a date night, like, there's not a draw to go downtown. But when Asheville City plays, I am downtown. I am spending my dollar at those restaurants. I'm spending my dollar at that general store, at that convenience store, at that gas station. I'm getting gas at that gas station. It is a draw that otherwise doesn't have me downtown. So it baffles me. Again, it's an under-leveraged property.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's an excellent point. I tend to joke, you know, most times a year. Used to be there was a tourist season in Asheville. Now it's all a year. It's year-round, even in the wintertime. Like, it goes down, but it's still tourist season year-round here.
Even during a global pandemic.
right?
Nothing will
stop them. I joke downtown's not safe for locals. I had an office there, so I could walk there in 20 minutes. Now that I live further out, I intentionally avoid going downtown. It's not really a local culture anymore. And this has been, anybody who's lived in Nashville or has been here, even or talked to somebody from Nashville, like, this has been, people have been yelling about this for, I think, longer than I've even been here. Just how downtown is losing its soul, its essence. It's kind of, it's not the city that, we all came here for. So I think your point is very good. Like, I go downtown for sports games. Yeah, for the soccer games and the baseball games. And it would be, I think it is partially the right thing to do. We're a couple of 30-something, white dudes talking about how we don't like going downtown. And downtown is, I don't know what the demographics would be, but it is very white friendly, and it does not have, I think, like, many inclusive or outreach efforts to be anything other than just a very safe place for middle class white people to come hang out for, a weekend or a week. So I think it would be the right thing to do to open up downtown to people other than anyone else other than that. And also, I think it'd be just a smart thing to do, looking at it pragmatically as well. Because, like you're saying, like, when I go down there, I usually end up parking somewhere on the south slope. And, it's pretty common to get a beer before or after the game or spend some money somewhere. And I think a lot of the people that go to these games, don't typically go downtown. Most locals don't go downtown a lot. So the city, I think, I don't know if it's hit a tipping point, but actually it needs to do better efforts to find reasons for people who live here to go back to the city again, because they kind of keep removing them. It'd be smart to build some back in. So I think it would be smart and practical. Maybe it'd also be the right thing to do for the city to invite people back in. Soccer makes perfect sense. I'd be curious if Asheville City had, like, one night with free attendance. What kind of draw, how many people it could pull in through the gates, or just like $1 ticket fee, to see what they could do in terms of attendance, and illustrate how many people, would go to a soccer game. If some of the barriers to remove, that's one that could be removed. Going downtown, obviously, Asheville City can't change that. Parking, we can't change that, but at least, like, removing some of those barriers to make it easier to go to a game, like, how many people would actually come if it were, more affordable.
It fascinates me, again, that there's always going to be the apples to oranges comparison against the tourists, and the tactics that the tourists use. To give, like, a one of my toes to see their P&L statements, to understand how the tourists are actually making money. So for those of you who may or may not know, the tourists are owned by the DeWine Silver Sea Baseball Group. I believe that's what it is. It is a combination of the governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, his family, and another family who have combined to buy that. I believe they bought it in 2009. Mike DeWine's son is the president and operator of the Taurus. They, again, much like Nathan said, they're currently renting the stadium. The lease is $1 a year. Renovations and improvements and maintenance on the stadium is divided up between the baseball group and the city on kind of a day-to-day. Maintenance is the baseball group's, and then overall grand renovations and improvements is on the city, as it is a city-owned property. But what kind of cracks me up about it is you're looking at an organization that does not pay for their players. The parent club, the Colorado Rockies, pays for the players. So that's not something to take into consideration when you're talking about your profits and losses. Obviously, the lease is very friendly. They received, over the course of the pandemic, which peeled back a little bit of the curtain and let us see who was actually playing Oz, basically, that there's only, I believe, 14 full-time employees. They received almost $200,000 in the PPP program, which divided up amongst those 14 employees, it wasn't a whole lot of money, but it allowed them to keep all 14. They had to lay off all their seasonal staff. But I don't understand how this organization is necessarily making money. What the are they just pantomiming being a professional sports organization? You know, they definitely have the Goodwill Knights, which, I mean, God bless the Goodwill. Please give them all the due benefits that they deserve. They're a great organization. But, you know, the bring two gently used items and you get in for free. The kids get in for free nights. The bring three cans of soup and you get in for free. Are, you know, when you see that they're averaging 2,700 fans per night, That's tickets distributed. That's tickets sold. That's tickets handed out. That is not actual butts in seats. Whatever they are getting for concessions and whatever they are getting for, you know, alcohol sales and stuff, merchandise, like, that has to be how they're making their money. And I don't understand how the city can smile upon that unless it's just so grandfathered in. And like you were saying, it's not a tongue-in-cheek joke, but maybe it's just such an institution that they don't even consider it worthy of examination and consideration of, you know, is there a way that the city can benefit more from this collaboration? Whereas I think Asheville City, the soccer team specifically, and what they're asking for is getting a fine-tooth comb taken through their requests. And the benefits that they do bring in are not getting the due justice that are deserved. Nathan, before we wrap it up, I want to open up this conversation just maybe even a little outside of sports. You know, what do you see the future of Asheville? I don't know. You mentioned how a lot of locals feel like the city that we moved to isn't the city that we currently live in. The city that we had read about, the city that was supposed to stay weird, has turned corporate. This is a complaint that has been lodged, I mean, seemingly in perpetuity ever since. I mean, Thomas Wolfe and the Homeward Angel complained about this exact same thing, that the northern tourists came into town and bought up all the best properties and, you know, we're turning the hotels into cookie cutter buildings, and Asheville had no soul because of these things. But it definitely seems like, whether it be the city, you know, Mayor Esther's response to the social justice happenings and events and tragedies, and the way Police Chief Zach handled some of the protests over the summer that I know you were personally involved in, it definitely maybe pulled the scab off some of these old wounds and shined a light on the bohemia that we thought we lived in, even while it may have been becoming increasingly a tourist destination and made for tourists. It, you know, maybe there's a second layer of it not even being, it's not even pretending to be for locals anymore. What do you think the future has in store for Asheville?
I mean, that's a big question. it seems like the writing is on the wall, that it's becoming, I've been kind of skeptical, I guess, of this, but it doesn't mean the writing's on the wall. They have been focusing their efforts so long on just being a tourist destination, of hotels, pandering to that, of putting so much money into attracting people to come visit here. You know, the city in the area has put so much money into that. You know, they can't reverse course. And they've, you know, the things that they've lost along the way, like kind of the art and culture, the bohemian, you know, scene that Asheville is known for. You know, could it be resurrected? You know, is it still strong enough that, you know, if there's space for it to come back, you know, can it? I mean, how Asheville became a bohemian Mecca in the first place was a set of very unusual circumstances. You know, the downtown was just a ghost town, and most of the buildings were, it was so cheap to rent them that they were being used for mattress warehouses, and the people who owned the buildings let the artists put art in their windows because mattress warehouses don't care. And that is so that it is very affordable to live here at the time. So that's what attracted a lot of artists. You could get, you know, free publicity essentially, and the community kind of followed behind that. That's not available right now. There's absolutely nothing remotely close to affordable in downtown. Within city limits, what I just hear, the average home price is $365 within city limits. Affordable housing here costs $275 for like a two-bedroom house. So it seems that they put all their eggs in the tourism basket. And if, you know, if things go well after this pandemic and the economy, you know, comes back, if it doesn't roar back, if it starts, you know, trending up again, then I think they're just going to stick to that model. You know, there are people who've been coming here, the tourists who are coming here, ones who haven't been negatively affected by the economy. You know, they can still afford to travel, they can still afford to take trips, spend a weekend in Asheville, and I think it'll probably just keep going the way that it is. If the economy, you know, nosedives, or the real estate market nosedives, that's where I think it could get interesting, because people that have bought homes here in the last 4 to 5 years, I think it's a bubble. And if that bubble pops, then people are going to be stuck with a lot of really expensive homes. Now, they won't be able to sell for probably a very long time. Like, you know, I know someone bought a 3-2 for $350,000. I think it's like 1,600 square feet total. And I had to put on my best poker face when they were telling me this. I was like, oh, I don't know if I agree with that decision to spend $350,000 on a 3-2 in Asheville right now. Like, so that could potentially shake things up, but my impression is they put all their eggs in the tourism basket, and it's just going to be, I know Gatlinburg is called the Myrtle Beach of the Mountains, but, you know, Asheville's going to be something along those lines. You know, the local culture will just slowly kind of shift over towards that. And, you know, we've already seen that now with all the marketing. It's about the experiences around the city. You know, anybody who lives here, they ask, you know, people ask, what do you love about Asheville? They name all the things that are around Asheville. Like, people don't say, I live in Asheville because I just love downtown, or there's this scene or this thing happening downtown. They talk, I love the mountains, I love the waterfalls, I go hiking, I can go biking, kayaking. It's all the things around Asheville, which is why, you know, what people love, people that live here. I'm a bit pessimistic on it as far as the future of Asheville goes. It's interesting to watch people that move here, you know, all the different waves. Everyone has their own idea of what Asheville's supposed to be. So I think the city does a fantastic job of selling itself as something it's not. And then people realize after they move here, they live here, that, you know, they basically got sold up a river. this came to light, especially when in the Flatiron Building meetings at City Council. I was there because I had my businesses there and was invested in it. And it was a great local community of 80 small businesses. There's nothing else quite like it in downtown. And at those meetings, there's a lot of people speaking. And one lady in particular, I remember, got up, and she lived in an apartment right across the street from the Flatiron. And she was complaining about how this was going to ruin her neighborhood. It's going to destroy her Asheville. There's nothing but hotels on her streets now. And so then I'm listening to it. I was like, yeah, you know, she's right. I agree with her. Then I realized her apartment was built 3 years prior. And she moved here from out of state into a hotel, or into a building that was built because old buildings got raised, and they put up a brand new shiny apartment building right downtown. So she was, you know, part of the problem then, but she came here because she thought Asheville was this place, not realizing that, you know, her building itself was a part of the problem, and has been a part of the problem, that idea. And, you know, I've seen that across different waves of basically people who move here, migrants, immigrants, whatever, transplants like me. And that's what I said the first year or two when I moved here, is, you know, I love Asheville. I love visiting here all the time. It felt like a great city to live. And then I got here, I was like, well, once you actually live here, it's not quite the same city. You know, you can't go downtown every night, going to the breweries and the orange peel and the restaurants. Like, you'll run out of money very, very fast. Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit pessimistic on it, but I feel like it's a pretty common story that I've heard across transplants here in Asheville.
And I think that kind of brings the conversation full circle, because we land back on the question of what is something that would draw us back to downtown, and what is something that, if you're not one of the individuals that is a mile deep and an inch wide, if you're one of the individuals that chooses to partake in Asheville culture an inch deep and a mile wide, and you want to take it all in, what is something that would bring you back to downtown? What is something that would allow you to have a reason to invite guests into town, who might just be crashing on your couch or staying at a hotel, but you, what's something that would cause you to go downtown and meet them for dinner, grab a beer, and then, you know, hike up the hill to Memorial for a gorgeous sunset and a good soccer game? What's something that a space that would allow 4,000 people to be outside listening to a concert? What is something that can create, again, a sense of community, a public space that can be utilized by different community partners, collaborated upon? I mean, guys, just look at Rabbit Rabbit. You know, Rabbit Rabbit's one of those spaces that has not even begun to see its potential, and it's already being utilized in very unique and innovative ways in the heart of South Slope. Imagine a city owned Rabbit Rabbit. You know, that is Memorial. That is an opportunity, much like McCormick, to leverage public space for the betterment of multiple community partners. So, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate this, and let's do this again sometime soon before you completely lose faith in town and end up in some Costa Rican tiki hut, which I'll without a doubt come visit you at.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. This has been fun. Would be happy to do it again here or in Costa Rica. Yeah, anytime.
Guys, thank you so much, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with brews. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some stunners. We'll win you over. And I guess that's why they call us the Blues.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast. Shoot us an email at youresmarterthanus@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @YOURE_smarter.